But this is John's telling of this particular episode in the life of Jesus, and it's different in a number of ways from the other Gospels. First is its placement in the Gospel narrative. The other writers place what you just heard toward the end, just before his crucifixion. John, however, as you note, has put this in the second chapter. It's like the second significant event of his ministry. Next, well, we heard a lot of anger here. One piece is different. Jesus does not accuse them of dishonesty, simply having a marketplace or selling things for their own profit, but not necessarily, as they do in the other Gospels, talking about a den of thieves or a household of robbers. So, in this sense, it may have not been so much about dishonesty as just what we do when we set up obstacles between God and people. Some things for you to ponder. Well, our 12 had been disciples for all of a week, maybe 10 days. In that time, Jesus had already changed water into wine, pretty good wine at that, at a wedding in Cana. Now they're at the Passover in Jerusalem. This is an exciting time to be in Jerusalem, as the city was full of religious pilgrims coming to the temple to make their offerings and sacrifices of thanksgiving to God. Jesus and the disciples made their way to the temple, where, as usual, there were merchants selling animals for sacrifice and exchanging the Roman currency for the temple money so that offerings could be made. Now, this was not a new or unusual practice, and certainly not the first time Jesus had ever seen such a thing happening. But something changed this time. For he made a whip from ropes and used it to drive all the animals out of the temple, from the cheapest pigeons and doves to the very expensive cattle. Then he scattered the coins at the exchanges and overturned their tables. And before he had even spoken a word, he had created even more chaos in the courtyard of the temple. And when he did speak, his words were hard to believe. "Do not make my Father's house into a marketplace." Then he is challenged by the faith leaders as to by whose authority did he do these things. What gave him the right to just come in and start upsetting the ways things have been done for generations? If you're from God, show us some miracle, some sign of your power. Almost taunting. Disciples for a week, and already he and thus them were in the face of the powers that be and not backing down. They had already remembered that verse from Psalm 69. It is zeal for your house that has consumed me. And perhaps they were also remembering the line that follows. The insults of those who insult you have fallen on me. You have to wonder what the disciples are thinking at this point. What have they gotten themselves into? I mean, the water into wine, well, that was pretty nice. That was pretty exciting. But this going in and upsetting tables and creating chaos in the temple at Passover, no less. He's going to end up getting us all arrested. His actions are going to come back on us. And this was just the beginning. If they thought this was going to be all about miracles and special, almost magical knowledge, after all, he had not too long ago promised Nathanael that he would see heaven open and God's angels going up to heaven and down to earth on him. But no one said anything about confronting the religious authorities or going to prison or acts like this. No one said anything about this. And things were just getting started. What was Jesus up to here? For you had to know, the very following Sabbath, all the merchants would be right back with their animals and their currency exchanges as though nothing had happened. So what was his point? Or at least what point was John trying to make about the ministry of Jesus by placing this incident at the beginning of his ministry? Because you know, John's not worried about accuracy in historical recording. He's trying to persuade you to come to faith in Jesus Christ. Perhaps, though, John was leading us all up to more of Jesus upsetting the way things were. Because if you follow along in the Gospel of John, from there he would try to help the Pharisee, Nicodemus, understand about being born of the Spirit. And a Samaritan woman, of all things, he taught her about living water and brought a whole village to faith. He would heal the child of a Roman official. And he would heal on the Sabbath. Bum, bum, bum. You know, it seemed that everything he was doing was confronting preconceived notions, practices that were not life-giving, reaching out to those others would never have touched. Turning over the tables and driving out livestock in the temple was just the start of a ministry of making trouble and stirring the waters. And the least likely people were coming to faith. An entire town of Samaritans, a Roman official, a man who had laid ill for 38 years. This Jesus is a troublemaker. No doubt about it. He is in the face of the way things are, lifting up those others will walk by, and clearing a path to the worship of God in spirit and in truth. And it wasn't going over very well with those in power. In fact, they were having none of it. And it's a wonder the disciples hung in with him at all, unless they were just curious to see how it would all play out. Of course, later they would learn that this was the path he was opening for them as well. A path of standing firm in the face of power, the powers that coerce and oppress. A path that would challenge their own ideas about who could follow Jesus and what this new church was going to look like. For some, it would lead to a death at the hands of the same powers that killed Jesus. The Jesus that teaches of blessing to the poor and the mourning, that blesses children and feeds thousands on a hillside, that gives sight to the blind and new life to lepers, this same Jesus made waves as he did it. He took the law and reclaimed it, commanding that we love our enemies and pray for those who persecute us. He insisted that we love our neighbors whether or not we trust them or think they deserve it. He challenged us to see him in the hungry and in the imprisoned, the sick and the dying, all of which can get us into a whole lot of trouble if you think about it for very long. Because then tables could be overturned. What others think is precious may be driven away. The people who profit from the way things are may not like us lifting up the ones they are trying to push down. You see, Jesus was showing the disciples that, among other things, the life of faith will put you face to face with the established order of the world. Because the established order is not the kingdom of heaven. At least not yet. But one thing to be noted, in the midst of all of this and throughout his ministry, Jesus continued to love. He loved enough to talk with the Pharisee Nicodemus in the middle of the night as Nicodemus struggled with what he had seen of Jesus and what he had been taught. He loved even those who would kill him, asking God to forgive them. So while we may stand face to face with injustice or prejudice or systems that reward greed and put down perceived weakness, we cannot give in to hate. For hate brings fear and separation, and Jesus' death is meant to reconcile us to one another. So whatever tables we may be called to turn over, whoever we are called to serve, we must love those who stand as barriers to us, seeking their redemption as much as our own. The same Jesus who cleared the temple also called us to see him in everyone, to be Christ to them, and to love the Christ we see in them. It's a hard road, a challenging road. That's why we come back every week, to be strengthened to do it again. Because that's, we see how hard it was on Jesus and how hard it can be on us. But it is also the only road. It is the road of love, and it's the road that he calls us to follow. Amen.